Willkommen bei Vineyard Flow, dem Vineyard-Podcast für Deutschland, Österreich und die Schweiz. Wir fragen, Vineyard, wer bist du? Woher kommst du? Wohin gehst du? Und was bewegt dich?
Ich bin Christian aus Hamburg und heute im Stream mit Jess Dooley aus St. Andrews in Schottland. Jesse ist Theologe, Musiker und Anbetungsleiter in der Kingdom Vineyard in St. Andrews. Außerdem wird er Gastsprecher beim jährlichen Treffen der Anbeter und Kreativen aus Vineyard Dach sein, der Worship Fusion. Die Worship Fusion wird 2025 in Schwäbisch Hall vom 19. bis 21. September stattfinden. Diesen Flow haben wir für euch in Englisch aufgenommen. Viel Spaß dabei! Jess, welcome to Vineyard Flow.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. It's a nice sunny day in Scotland. Pretty warm.
So how do the Scotsmen deal with the heat?
Taking their shirts off. Yeah, mostly we complain about it being too hot. And then in the winter, we complain about it being too cold, you know.
I'm very happy we'll have you as guest speaker at the Worship Fusion this year. And so we do this flow to introduce you a little bit. Why should people come and listen to you at the Worship Fusion?
Yeah. First of all, they should come to Worship Fusion because these kinds of events are just wonderful opportunities to connect with other people that are in our worship tribe and just connect with people that really understand who we are and what we do. And it's a really liberating, free environment that I've found for myself. So I just encourage everybody to take part in these sorts of things. But yeah, I'm just really excited to come and be there in Germany. And I have a deep connection with Germany and with Austria. My mother is Austrian and my parents met in Munich. And yeah, it just feels really like a second home to me. So very much looking forward to being there.
So the title of today's flow is The Mystery of Worship and the Big Five. But before we dive in, I'd love to introduce you a little bit. Looking at your childhood, did you grow up in a family of faith? Take us in a little.
Yeah, my family was in no way connected to church at all. In fact, if anything, very resistant and anti-church and organized religion. My parents were hippies, actually, and very intellectual people. They didn't deny any kind of spiritual reality, but like a lot of hippies, it was more of a mystery. And that's the environment I grew up in. So I didn't encounter Jesus for myself until I was 17 years old. And that was quite a shock and quite a big change in my life.
What happened when you were 17?
There was a group at school that used to debate one another just for the fun of debating controversial ideas. And there was somebody that I grew close to that was always promoting Christianity, and I was always attacking Christianity. Eventually, this person was brave enough to invite me to a weekend away with a church youth group. I went and I discovered that all of my prejudice and all of my ideas about what Christianity was and who Christians were, they were all wrong, really. And I'm also somebody who doesn't like to be wrong. When I find out that I'm wrong, I want to investigate and explore what is actually true. And as I did that, I was just blown away, mostly by the people, not by the idea of church or anything like that, but it was them and how they behaved and the way that they opened the Bible and really wrestled with what they were reading. They didn't have any simple answers to questions. And I just got drawn into who Jesus was and the fact that he wasn't who I thought he was. And so, yeah, immediately gave my life to God.
Okay. So you grew up in a secular home?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your parents were hippies, yeah. You said. They were generally open, but they wouldn't, yeah, like churchy stuff,
yeah.
Or maybe even the Bible.
Right.
When you were 17, someone invited you to a Christian camp, and you realized, whoa, this is better than it looks from the outside. growing up in this hippie household, I mean, looking back, did you ever pray and hoped for God to exist?
No, I don't think I did. My dad was a musician and I became a musician at a very early age. And I would say that the way I experienced or understood any kind of spirituality was mostly in connection with music and the feelings that music would give me. And that for me was, and still is, a spiritual experience, to play music, to listen to music, to feel music. So that was really where spirituality existed for me.
Music as bridge to the unseen?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's like something in me is vibrating with the music, and that is some kind of connection to something that can't be seen and can't be understood. You know, you can learn music theory, and I did, and you can learn how to play an instrument, and I did, but ultimately those were just ways to try and connect with something that I couldn't see. So yeah, that was really what I would describe as my spirituality.
So do you remember hearing the voice of God for the very first time? Was that through music or was it through something else?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there was a moment that I heard the voice of God. It was more that when I did encounter Jesus, I understood that he had always been there, and the way I had experienced spirituality was not wrong. It was just incomplete. It was like Paul says in the Bible, it was like a reflection in a mirror that I was glimpsing something about God all the time, all of my life through music.
Yeah. So music helped you like entering God's place without knowing his name?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the types of music I would play would be often very improvisational, and you would try to express yourself in new and unpredictable ways. And I guess that was my prayer voice. It was trying to say something that couldn't be said in words, that had some kind of more heart and less brain. Yeah, coming out through notes rather than words.
So the language of your heart towards God was music?
Yeah.
Is it still the biggest bridge you take meeting with God?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm intensely in love with the Word of God in Scripture, and I love language and I love studying words, but I still feel as though I say my most meaningful and honest prayers through music than I do through words. I feel as though I say more honest, true, real things with my guitar than I ever do with my words.
The musical expression, the creativity, but also you're a theologian.
Yeah.
So that takes a lot of brain, a lot of thinking. That seems like there could be a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, the way I look at it is that when I study and I do engage my brain to really dig deep into language and scripture, I think actually the fact that I have my deepest expression still rooted in music, it helps stop me get too carried away in brain work. I think that I've studied in universities and I could go on and do further study in universities, but to be honest, I'm not a real academic. I don't really fit that well in academic environments, because I'm always asking the question, so what? I'm always really excited about engaging in debate and discussion about really specific and small ideas of theology. But ultimately, I want it to draw me closer to God, and I want it to spur my heart into worship. And some of the times I think that people are so stuck in the world of ideas, they lack that bridge, as you've really helpfully called it. So I don't ever want to get so clever that I stop singing simple love songs to Jesus.
Worship and music as a personal anchor to stay grounded with Jesus. Okay. Hey, our topic today is the mystery of worship and the Big Five. So maybe we start with the Big Five and see then how we slowly stumble into the mystery. So what do we mean by the Big Five? In the Vineyard, we center our act of worship around five ideas or values: intimacy, integrity, accessibility, kingdom expectation, and passion.
Yeah.
So how did these five develop?
Yeah, it's a good question. When I joined the Vineyard back in 2001, everybody that was involved in worship was already talking about three of those five: intimacy, integrity, and accessibility. Yeah, where did they come from? To be honest, I don't know. It's one of those things that almost happened looking back rather than looking forwards. So a lot of the early days of the Vineyard, it was all about people just trying to find a more personal connection with God in worship. I suppose when the next generation of Vineyard people came along, they needed to be taught what was important in Vineyard worship. And so somebody somewhere along the line came up with these three. It may have been Brian Dirksen, but I can't swear to that, but it probably was because he's a great teacher. But used these three words to really describe what was already happening. These were the three things that really described Vineyard worship. And then I think somewhere around 2013, 14, maybe, John and Debbie Wright, who became directors of the Vineyard in the UK, they added two values, and those were passion and kingdom expectation. And so they became five. And then I got involved in helping to train worship leaders and teams around the UK when we were trying to work out what do we need to train people in, what do we need to teach people about Vineyard worship. Everything kept coming back to the values. We could teach people how to operate PA systems or how to build worship sets or how to play their instruments or how to choose songs and things like that. But ultimately, that was all more surface level stuff. We wanted to get to, why are we doing this? What are we trying to achieve? What are we reaching for? And that's why we spent a long time trying to develop the language around these values and finding them important. Yeah, so that's why I got involved in teaching values and writing about them.
So what happens when the value of intimacy is missing or being ignored?
That's a great question. I think sometimes when we sing together in church, I've sometimes imagined it like these songs are like balloons that we're letting go of, and they drift up into the air, and we hope that they might find God somewhere out there. And I think the value of intimacy calls to mind the presence of God, the sense that we are not just singing songs to God or about God and hoping that he hears them, but actually recognizing that God is already in the room, that when we sing, we're singing to somebody who is closer to us than we are to ourselves and to each other. And that brings the whole thing from out there to in here and among us and in our midst. So it becomes an occasion of encounter with the living God rather than just sending him a message.
Why can it be challenging to actually encounter God in this very, intimate way?
Yeah, because you can't encounter God and leave unchanged. You've got to submit yourself to the refining fire that is the presence of God. And that's dangerous stuff. That's walking into the Holy of Holies. That is really powerful life or death stuff. Yeah, it's a challenge. It means you've got to, you can't hide. There's nowhere to hide. Not that we want to hide, but when we actually recognize that the presence of God is in our midst, we realize that there is no hiding. And that means the light shines on absolutely all of who we are. And we see what God sees. Yeah, that's challenging stuff.
Okay, let us look at integrity. How does integrity in worship look for you?
I think for me, it's about not pretending. It means that our songs have to express reality rather than a kind of dream. You know, sometimes we say things about how our lives are completely transformed doing life with God, but at the same time, we have to recognize and not deny that this world is under sin and brokenness. So we have to recognize not just the kingdom come, but also the kingdom yet to come. And that means being honest and being real about hurt and pain and brokenness and suffering and injustice. And when we fail to do that, it means that we are only expressing the part of us that we wish were fully true. And we're burying a lot of stuff that is still true. But we don't want to look at it. We don't want to admit it. We don't want to feel it. And I just think that's ultimately that's dishonest to God and to ourselves. And it doesn't help us. It doesn't help us move forward. It doesn't help us recognize that we are on a journey, that we haven't arrived at the destination, that the kingdom isn't all now. It's also not yet.
So integrity is about a healthy balance.
Yeah.
About the already and not yet.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about accessibility. When was this value challenging for you?
I think it's probably the thing that is most challenging most of the time, actually. Especially as a musician, I have my own personal preferences musically. I like to play different types of music and I like to express myself musically in particular ways, but accessibility forces me to ask the question, is this helpful for the people? And so my role as a worship leader is to try and create an environment that is welcoming to as many people all of the time. You can never really achieve that, but you can try. You can't always be everything to all people. But my job as a worship leader, I see, is about removing obstacles. What is it about worship that is going to make it hard for you to participate? And let me do what I can to change that. So musically, that means finding songs that people can understand and that people can sing in musical forms that are easy to learn and easy to pick up. But also, it's all sorts of things like how loud is the music? Like how easy is it to see what the words of the song are? It's lots of practical things. If people don't know the words, they can't join in. If people don't know the songs, they can't join in. If it's too loud, then people feel like they're at a rock concert. If it's too quiet, they feel like they are exposed and too vulnerable. So all of these things can be obstacles to participation. And my job as a worship leader is to create accessibility for all of them.
One of my goals is to do everything I do in a way that everyone can understand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that even like outsiders, people who do not know Jesus as we know him, would understand and would be able to come along and join in. So when I look at worship settings, I'm often concerned about the lyrics of our songs. Yeah. And one of my main goals as a worshiper is to sing songs that would be open and accessible even to people who never read the Bible.
Exactly.
And who never were in any church setting, but that they would still make sense. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that that involves sacrifice on my part as a worship leader, but everybody has to sacrifice to a certain extent. I need to say, okay, it's not going to be helpful for people here if I do a set that sounds like prog metal or free jazz or something like that, because it's not going to be something that people can join in with. And similarly, as you say, the theology, the words, they need to be, you know, we are putting words on people's lips and we don't want to force them to be dishonest by saying things that they don't understand or make no sense to them. Now, there is a limit to that, because I think that sometimes we want to do things in a way that is poetic and artistic. And so it doesn't always touch the heart to just say really cold, boring phrases that are true, but just aren't interesting to say. But neither does it make a great deal of sense to say something so obscure and so opaque and artistic that nobody understands it. And so you try and find that balance somewhere in between.
So this has probably to do a lot with local songwriting?
I think so, yeah. Forms of idioms and just figures of speech that might actually make sense to the group that you're in, but not necessarily to others. I think local songwriting can really make use of that kind of local expression.
Let us look at the fourth value of our Big Five, kingdom expectation. Can you share a moment when this value became real to you?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think for me, this springs from intimacy, where if you are expecting to meet with God as you worship, then you have to also expect the kingdom to break through. You have to look for signs that God's power is moving in our midst. And so that means that, again, we're not just singing songs. We are participating in God establishing his kingdom. And that means looking for healing and looking for prophecy, looking for chains being broken. And that means, as a worship leader, just trying to create space, not just to sing at God, but also to wait for him and to see what he is doing and to listen to his voice. So I think kingdom expectation is, for me, it's about taking opportunities to stop what we're doing and look to see what God is doing. And that is just something that I feel like I really learned in the vineyard. I learned that it was okay to just dwell in quiet spaces or in meditative spaces as a congregation and stop thinking about what we were doing and start thinking about, what is God doing? What is God doing here? Has anybody been healed? Does anybody have a word of prophecy? Looking for ways in which our reality is being invaded by the Spirit of God as we worship.
Do you remember a certain event where the kingdom really broke through during a time that you led worship? And was it by accident, or did you pray for it, or did you wait on it? What happened?
It's hard to think of one specific event, because I try to do it every time I lead worship. So yeah, it is something that I make time for and I make space for. My congregation are used to it now, but every once in a while, I do have to say to them that this is what we're doing. To say, hey, we're going to just take a moment now just to meditate on what God might be saying back to us. and what God might already have done in our bodies if we're looking for healing, if we're hoping for some kind of healing. And so sometimes I just need to remind people that God is here and that God is moving. And what that does is the congregation then suddenly they take their eyes off of me as a worship leader. They stop thinking, okay, what are we doing next? And they suddenly start looking at each other and themselves and at the things God might be doing in the room. And so just giving that permission to almost stop at a station. It's like a train that just you stop at the station. It's take a moment to look around. Where are we? What is God doing right now?
So this kingdom expectation actually takes pressure off us as leaders.
Absolutely. I believe that to be true. Yeah. Because actually, we're not trying to make something happen. We're trying to enter into what God is already doing. The worship that is already taking place and has taken place from age to age in the heavenly realms. And so we're entering into something that has already begun. We're not trying to start something.
Entering in the worship of God that has already begun.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds super great.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to sharing something about that at the Worship Fusion, because my favorite book of the Bible is Revelation, and that's what I see happening in Revelation, is John walking into a massive worship service that has been going on for eternity.
All right, let's look at the last of the big five, passion. Passion means to worship in a way that costs us something. When did worship cost you something?
Oh, gosh, it costs me all of the time. I think actually leading worship is a very vulnerable thing to do, especially for me. As I said, being a musician, it is my most intimate language. And when I lead worship, it's scary because I'm standing in front of people just completely unmasked and completely myself with no filters. And so that's quite a vulnerable space. But ultimately, worship is something that has to cost us something. That if we start thinking about worship as something that God has given us so that we can feel good about ourselves, then we've forgotten that actually worship is about sacrifice. God is worthy of worship, whether we feel good or not. And so we have to give him worship. Sometimes when we're feeling like we really don't want to. And so actually sometimes the hardest times to worship, when, for example, you're experiencing grief or you're hoping for a miracle that you're not seeing, and maybe you're seeing miracles happen to other people and you're so desperate to see God move in a certain way in your own life. To worship in those times is absolutely essential, but it is costly because it means I have to subject my own desires to the obligation to worship God. But also worship is no true worship if it isn't serving other people and sacrificing for other people and serving the poor and ministering to the sick. Yeah, I need to make sure that my life is one of service and of sacrifice. When you think about the passion of Jesus, it's all about Jesus taking up his cross and allowing himself to be subjected to torture and death for our sake. And that was his passion that took him there. And so I need to make sure that worship is something that I give my whole self to, regardless of what I might get out of it. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds really exciting. And thank you. I'm going to have to think that through. Nice. We're coming to the end of the session, but let us zoom out a little bit and maybe even look beyond a vineyard perspective for a moment.
Yeah.
It seems to me, looking around the Christian globe, the worship setting in our meetings can easily become a show, something to invite maybe the unchurched or to kindle our adrenaline. So, Jess, what would you say, what happens to our communal worship when we begin to lose the mystery and awe of God?
It's difficult because we want to give our very best to God, and we want to develop the gifts that God has given us, and that means excellence. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. When I look at the Old Testament, when they're first building the tabernacle, it's made out of the best materials and the finest craftsmanship. It is extravagant and expensive and all of those things. But the danger is that becomes our focus, that we start to seek so that we can be excellent, and we start to be polished musicians with studio production sound in live environments. And we do that because we like it, and we do that because we're spending a lot of our energy comparing ourselves to other people and saying, hey, we like that better, so we want to be more like that. And what happens then is our focus, the focus of our attention, has slipped. We're not doing it anymore so that we can give our best to God. We're doing it so that we can keep up standards and maintain a reputation almost, but also maintain, as you say, a kind of an environment that we enjoy. We want it to be high all of the time. We want it to be polished all of the time. And life just isn't like that. So it becomes something that no longer looks like a true expression of our hearts when it is always perfect. And so I think the mystery of God is one way that we can really remedy that. And that's just to constantly be aware that a good worship set is not judged by hitting all the right notes and perfect execution of the plan. I think a good worship set is measured more by, did we see God move? Did we experience the presence of God? And as we led worship, did we respond to what he was doing, or did we just push on with our own plan? And that means sometimes that things get messy, because you've got to be risk takers. You've got to be flexible. You've got to surrender your plan. You've got to go places that you haven't prepared. And so I think that the more we tighten our grip, every single element of a worship service, the less we create space to look for those opportunities to see God and what he is doing. And it becomes more about us than it becomes about God. So it's not a danger that we give God too beautiful a thing, but it is a danger that we become so fixed on that being the marker of our success.
So what do you hope for this area of the mystery of God for the Vineyard movement in the coming years?
One of the challenges, of course, is just trying to prevent ourselves slipping into that show mentality, making sure that we don't become so obsessed with doing everything right and take the focus off doing what is right. You know, we've got so many tools that we can use in worship now, but and I'm not afraid of tools like backing tracks and creating environments with good lighting and all of those sorts of things. But I want us to make sure that we're using the tools and that we're not bound by them, that actually we still have the flexibility with all of these tools to focus on what God is doing and to go with where he is leading us, not to be locked in to our plans. And so I think I would just encourage everybody to be intentionally creating the potential, go down different paths and down different tracks in the midst of a plan, to almost practice for spontaneity. I think that's one of the things I've learned as a musician, particularly in jazz music, where you can't plan for spontaneity without actually practicing it. So we've got to, in the rehearsal spaces, not just work through songs, but actually work worship together and actually recognize that God is in that space as well, and practice as bands and as worship producers or whatever you want to call it, practice going off script so that we're more open and readier for what God might want to do. Yeah.
All right. We're landing our session today. Give us some prophetic edge at the end, Jess. What do you think Jesus is saying to us as Vineyard Dach movement these days?
Gosh, when I've been praying for Vineyard Dach and the meeting that I'll be having with you in September, I cannot help but think that he wants to birth more songs, more German language songs in you and from you. And I think that maybe Christianity coming once again into a time where it will have to speak out against what is happening in culture and in politics. And that's going to be a really uncomfortable space to be in. But I think it's birthed in worship that actually it comes from knowing the security of God's love and not fearing anything that can happen. Because you know how strong God's love is and how secure your future is in him. And so I think worship is going to get dangerous. Worship is going to need to get prophetic by speaking out against things that are happening in culture and in politics. And so I think there's tough times coming, but there are beautiful times coming. And I really think that worship is the crucible where people are going to be strengthened and refined for that to happen. And songwriting is where people are going to find language to express that. Yeah.
Thank you, Jess. I'm really looking forward to see you at the Worship Fusion in Schwäbisch Hall this September.
So much looking forward to it.
Thanks for being on the Flow.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Das war Vineyard Flow, der Vineyard-Podcast für Deutschland, Österreich und die Schweiz. Wir haben gefragt, Vineyard, wer bist du, woher kommst du, wohin gehst du und was bewegt dich? Ich bin Christian aus Hamburg und war heute im Stream mit Jess Dooley aus St. Andrews in Schottland. Ich wünsche allen Hörern und Hörerinnen noch einen wunderschönen Tag und bleibt immer im Flow. Bye, bye.
Hast du Fragen, Wünsche oder Feedback zum Flow? Über flow@vineyard-dach.net kannst du uns erreichen. Wir freuen uns, von dir zu hören. Möchtest du den Flow unterstützen? Benutze dafür bitte PayPal unter der Adresse paypal@vineyard-dach.net.